Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa. Thank you for tuning in. You know, today's episode relates directly to things that I talk about in my online course for women, the Desire Spa, because one of the things we're looking at are the various kinds of things that get in the way of sexual desire for women, specifically in that course. But there are obstacles. And in fact, there are so many different kinds of obstacles. It's sort of amazing to me that anybody really ever wants sex. But one of them, or maybe I should say two of them, are trying to get pregnant and maybe struggling with that or going through fertility treatments. And so the nature of change in your sex life can really impact your experience and your interest in being sexual. And then the other one is, of course, giving birth, having a baby, adding a child to your family, and the kinds of challenges that that brings and the dramatic shifts in your life. It's a really common place for couples to struggle with sex. It's after they've added kids to their family. It's such a big change. And my guest today is Paula Leach, and she is another certified sex therapist. I've had her on the show before, actually. And she's going to be talking about, well, we will be talking about the challenges and somewhat the opportunities, you know, the strategies for people that are in either of those phases, either trying to get pregnant, and it's not just going really quick, and then, of course, adding a baby to your family, whether you birth it or not. Either way, there is upheaval, and it's dramatic. So if you are in that phase, if you might be in that phase, if you know anybody that might be in that phase, I think you're going to get a ton out of this episode. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Paula, thank you so much for being back with me on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat again.
I am too. And I wanted, if you don't mind, you said you were willing to get a little personal. So we're going to be talking about, you know, the sexual, I don't know, implications, I guess, or sexual pleasure or fulfillment implications of trying to get pregnant and then having a baby. And what makes you interested in this topic?
So what makes me interested in this topic is that coming into my own personal journey and trying to conceive and then birthing humans, I had no clue what to expect. And, you know, and I've always been such a control freaky kind of a person that I was like, well, I've got this. And especially the trying to conceive journey, but all along the way, you are like directly confronting your relationship to control and you don't have a lot.
I'm sorry, I laugh. That's so poignant. I mean, it's so, so true.
It's so true. It really puts you in touch with how insanely mysterious all of this is and how insanely miraculous all of it is. And that can be absolutely crazy making and hard and brutally painful and also incredibly magical and amazing and wonderful all in the same thing. And I lost my ding dong marbles through the process. So, because I was like, I'm doing everything right. I should, you know, and I'm like,
you're right. A plus B equals C, right?
Yes. And I'm like, we're still doing it. Like, isn't there an app for this or something? Like, can I press a button, you know? So it broke me open. Like it really and truly broke me open, that this whole process and still. And so it really opened my eyes. And being a sex therapist, I was like, oh my gosh, this is just an area that is underexplored.
Yeah. And how old are your kids, if you don't mind me asking? How recent is this for you?
This is, so my oldest is 4 and my youngest is 2.
Okay. Okay. So my oldest is 27 and my youngest is 20. So my memories of this are a little bit more distant, but I can still go back to those times, especially postpartum, and think about the ramifications of that on my intimate connection with my husband. So,
gosh, a million ramifications on, you know, like there's a trillion ways that your life changes and your sexuality is profoundly impacted by this. So yeah, it makes sense that it would still be something you can kind of go back to, because for a lot of couples, I feel like it's also kind of represents this major turning point for a million reasons, but like
Right. Sexually,
it can represent the first time they've ever had to really confront, wow, there are big changes happening in our sex life. Like the first time they're having to really engage in this conversation in a larger way. And that's really hard. And that's also a really great opportunity because we're going to have to do this in an ongoing way as our sexuality continues to change as we get older.
Right. It's not the last thing we're going to have to adapt to.
Exactly.
Right? But it is a big one. It is a big one. I'm wondering if you want to talk about this. Two different things come to mind. We could either talk about the trying to get pregnant part of this and then the postpartum part, you know, or after you've had a child to the family. Or I suppose we could split it down more like the challenges and then the benefits or the upsides or the gifts. Do you have a preference?
Either one is fine with me. Either direction sounds great.
Okay, well, let's do quadrants.
Okay, quadrants okay. are good.
So let's talk about specifically people that are trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And I suppose maybe it matters how difficult that is for people and what kind of journey that they're really on. But what are some of the challenges for people in terms of their relationship and their sex life specifically?
Sure. So as most of us know, people are starting this process later in life. I'm 37, I think. You know, I don't know what day it is.
I know you're getting to the point.
I think I'm 37. I might be 38. Who knows? So we began this in my 30s. And a lot of people are having children in their 30s and their 40s. This is increasingly common. Also, if we look at the research, there's a new book called The Countdown, I think. In general, fertility is getting more and more challenging. It's the life that we live. It's the air that we breathe. It's, you know, so more and more couples are dealing with difficulties in trying to get pregnant and having to have intervention, IVF, IUI, that sort of thing. And a lot of couples are grappling with the thing that I began with, which is this like element of control. Wait, if this is supposed to be easy, we've been told our whole lives, like, oh, don't have sex, you're going to get pregnant. Don't have sex, you're going to get pregnant. And here I am trying and I know when my fertile window is, and I know when I'm ovulating, and I know exactly when to time this to have sex, and it's not happening for me. And I think that that is really, really hard. And then I think people are also surprised at how then scary that becomes. Like, oh, well, I always wanted this, but now I am really put in touch with how deeply meaningful and how deeply I crave this or I want this in my life. And so, oh my gosh, we have to figure this out. So it is a lot of like trying to figure out when our fertile window is, lots of ovulation predictor kits, lots of tracking of the cycle for folks, which can include things like taking their basal body temperature every morning or checking their cervical mucus or the position of their cervix. You know, it can get that intense. And the thing that's challenging about that even is that even those things can feel really subjective. Like when you're experiencing them, you know, it's like, was that temperature? Did it go up a half a degree? Did I move at all? Oh gosh, did I move? That probably affected that. You know, all of it, anxiety can just hijack it and make it all so hard. But as a result, sex can become something that is very clinical, high stress, high pressure. And so the fun and the casual nature of it can shift. And in some ways also it becomes really deepening, right? Like it can really deepen the intimacy between two people because you are aware of the fact that you're expanding your family and that you're potentially creating a life. And that can be really wonderful as well, alongside the like aspect of it that can get really hard or stressful, especially as month after month goes by and it's not happening. And you're having, as a couple, you're having to go through the process of, oh my gosh, okay, we did this. Are you feeling any differently? Oh my gosh, that felt a little weird. Maybe that's it. Maybe this is it this time. But you can't help but for that to happen. And then the grief that comes when it doesn't happen and then having to go through that month after month, sex again can just become something that, again, it's scheduled, pressured, high intensity, high stakes.
What are some of the ways, I mean, I'm thinking of some things clients have said to me, but people can report that there's like a hangover from this, or there are after effects of this long after they maybe have gotten pregnant or had a baby, or, you know, there can be changes in the way people are interacting in sex or experiencing their sex life, you know, ongoing, right? Like what are the kinds of things people say or experience where this is still, you know, it's created some sort of difference now that they're living with?
Well, you know, I think a big part of it is that I say that for both partners, but I want to say specifically for the person with the female anatomy, reproductive anatomy, who's trying to get pregnant, right? You really start to feel like you are at odds with your body, you know, like you're kind of at war with it. And I think most of us spend our lives with, you know, different ideas about what it means to have a body that's valuable, that's attractive. A lot of people work their entire lives to feel a sense of control over how their body behaves. And again, it's not behaving like I want it to. And for some folks, a lot of folks, myself included, there's miscarriage, ectopic pregnancies, those sorts of things. And it can be really hard to be in your own skin on the back of mm-hmm. those experiences. And it can be really hard to be in your body in an ongoing way on the back of those experiences, unless we are being really intentional about going to therapy or addressing that, moving these feelings through. The body holds a tremendous amount of grief. So there's that aspect of it. And then there is the hangover, where a lot of couples do come in and say, I'm burnt out. I don't want to have sex anymore. I'm burnt out. We've been having sex, you know, that has been timed, pressured sex for months and months and months, and I'm spent, and I do need a little bit of air from it. And that's okay. You know, I need a little bit of a reset. And we also, like, for some couples, it is a matter of also sort of needing to feel like I've worked with couples who were like, oh, good. We're doing IVF. We don't have to worry about having sex during the fertile window at that specific. We don't have to worry about having sex to conceive anywhere. We can go back to being just about connection or play or fun. And for some couples, we even kind of have to work at that a little bit to get back there, to feel a little bit different for a while. And I think for a lot of us, the challenge is to not avoid it because it feels a little different or a little bit funky for a while, to try to engage and see how it feels today and what was meaningful about it today. What did I appreciate about this experience today? Even if it wasn't a blast or as thrilling as it was a year ago before we started all this, you know?
Yeah. Another thing I'll sometimes hear from clients, I'm thinking about, I guess, penis owners at the moment, but, you know, sometimes there's some sexual dysfunction that comes along with this, right? I'm supposed to show up because the stick says go. Somehow supposed to have an erection, supposed to have an orgasm. Like, there's certain things dependent on that.
Yes.
You know, if you try to get pregnant, and that can be a lot, especially when it's become clinical, it's become pressured, it's become obligated, it's got to happen now. And it's,
oh my gosh,
it's just not
the thing. It's like anxiety is the culprit for most sexual dysfunctions, right? It's like the primary culprit in these struggles. And then, yeah, you've got this, like, you got to have sex, you got to ejaculate, we got to do it in this amount of time, and during this week, it's a ton of pressure. And the body, you know, the body's like, oh, you're feeling stressed. Is there a tiger standing next to you? You know, like, now's not the time.
Right.
It's fight or flight, not stay and play. You know, it's not time to chill out. And because, you know, our whole sexual arousal process is regulated by our sleep and rest and restore process. So if we're feeling stressed out or any amount of pressure whatsoever, things happen in the body that kind of shut down sexual functioning. And so, yeah, this is absolutely where a lot of erectile dysfunction or delayed ejaculation or premature ejaculation can rear its head in a major way.
Yeah. What are suggestions that you have for people that maybe are in that phase? Like, we'll get to the place of once people have passed
this, you know,
and all the kinds of impacts we've got there. But if anyone listening is in the midst of this, or maybe they'll remember when they go into this, what are the kinds of suggestions you give? How do people maintain a sense of intimate connection, maintain some focus on pleasure and presence? And
yeah, well, the first thing that comes to mind for me is just like bearing in mind that this is a season, that this is hard and it is painful and it is deepening in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, this is a really vulnerable experience for couples to go through. And so this is hard. This is really hard. There's no getting around it, and it can feel like a really isolating, painful time for folks. So bearing in mind that, like, again, this is a season, this is not forever. And, you know, you can bounce back, you can recover from this. And it may take a little while, and it may require things like How do we talk about what intimacy is to us now? How can we expand our definition of it? You know, a lot of us, we get into relationships and we fall into this sort of like routine around sex and sexuality, and we have rigid script around it. And then something like this happens that challenges us to like look beyond that. Oh, wait, you know, what else was this experience to us? And how else do we feel connected? And what else is meaningful in terms of touch and pleasure for us? If it can't be right now, for me, the way that we are doing it when we're trying to have our baby, you know, like it has to be. And sometimes it also is like, you know, people do all kinds of interesting creative things. Like, okay, we have our fertile window sex, and that is what it is. You know, I'm not in like a super playful space, or I can't get kinky, or I can't do when I'm in that zone and I just want to have sex. I'm going to put my feet up against the wall or do whatever I'm going to do. You know, I need that to be that. And I can't really, it's like trying to tell someone to relax. Like I can't come out of my space around that. And that is what it is. But outside of the fertile window, can we be intentional about having date nights and fun, playful nights where we can be intimate together, and we can, you know, and that can be penetration. It can be other things. But how can we talk about that? How can we talk about what feels good tonight while I am in this interesting spot with my body? And we are in this kind of like time of transition and change and anxiety, and what feels good to us today? And can we get creative around that? Can we get nuanced around that? Does it, again, it can include sex, quote unquote, penetration, whatever sex looks like for folks, but it could include so many other things too.
Yeah. Going to take just a short little break to let you know about a new online course that I've got available called The Desire Spa. This is for women who are in an otherwise happy relationship but are struggling with sexual desire. This is a course just for you to figure out what is in the way of your desire, how to tune in and connect with what you could actually enjoy about physical intimacy, how to deal with all of this with your partner to totally transform your sex life. So it can be something you look forward to. And basically, it can just be one more great part of your relationship with your partner instead of this thing that drags you down. The first step would be to sign up for my free masterclass at intimacywithease.com/masterclass. It'll talk about how to want sex again and lead into the next steps if you are interested in joining me in the spa. Back to the show. The other thing that I think comes up that I'm thinking about at the moment is just the grief people can have if they're really struggling to get pregnant, or maybe are learning that it's just not going to happen for them. You know, sex is like the place, you know, where we would have hoped we were making a baby, and that there can be so much grief in those moments, right?
So much grief. And I think a lot of people's inclination, I think, you know, as humans, we tend to do this, which is instead of grieving that together, allowing that to even maybe show up, you know, it might.
Yeah.
It's likely that it will show up, that you'll have emotional moments sexually with your partner because it did represent something for you for a period of time. And it didn't come to fruition, or it didn't come to fruition as you thought it would, or there was trouble and challenge along the way. And so there may be emotion that's part of that process. And I think a lot of people, because, you know, sex is such a vulnerable experience. It's the ultimate vulnerable experience. And I think a lot of people feel really nervous about that, or are afraid that grief might show up there. I might get emotional. And so I'm just going to kind of like hold back from that.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a really tough thing too. I mean, as sex therapists, we're talking about constantly like how to slow people down, you know, when working with sexual dysfunctions, because there's so much anxiety and we have to move into a different place. And when we slow down, big things come up for us.
Yeah.
What do I need from my partner if that does happen? How can we be there for one another if that's the case? And then how do we move through that and return to connection?
Yeah.
I mean, we can stay connected through that whole experience, but return to like a comforting, loving kind of connection, so that we're not continuing to create or reinforce challenging associations with sex.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of the trying to get pregnant phase?
I think that about sums it up. I always like to mention, and this doesn't necessarily have to do with sex, but for folks like who are struggling at the moment with it, the idea again that anxiety is such a pervasive part of this experience. It's such a massive part of it. We don't know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how, you know, all that stuff. And anxiety is such like a master of disguises. It really is. And it can fool you into believing that it's your intuition telling you something when it's anxiety, when it's fear, when it's, you know, our way of sort of like backing up from something because it is hard. Like, you know, for me personally, it was, I just had this horrible intuition that it just wasn't going to happen for me. You know, like I'm not going to get there. It took me, you know, nearly 2 years with my son. And I just was like, I just have this deep intuition that this is not going to show up. And that was anxiety. That was fear, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I encourage people to keep that in mind through the process.
All right. Let's go on the other side of the door. Birth, postpartum time, and I suppose even life with young children. And let's talk about some of the challenges and things that come up for people around sex and connection with their partner. I know, where do we start, right?
Oh my gosh. Where do we start? Oh my goodness. Well, so, I mean, the thing that I think is so funky about all this is that, like, I remember my first appointment, like post birthing a human out of my body, which I will never fully wrap my head around in my whole life that happened.
Yeah.
That we can do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the like postpartum questionnaire and it's got like 5 questions on it. And it's like, are you more sad than usual? Are you more anxious than you? And it's like, well, of course. Yeah.
Right. Right. Because this is hard.
Yeah. Like literally everything has changed. My body has changed. Organs are rearranging themselves as we speak. My hormones are crashing and trying to restabilize. I'm renegotiating the roles in my relationship with my partner. I'm getting to know my partner as a co-parent. I'm covered in breast milk and poop, and I'm supposed to feel sexy, you know, like that's, you know, so like just insane amount of change that happens. And I think a lot of people feel this way. There's the like, of course, the bliss of it all, but you're in such a haze. It's hard to find yourself and you're exhausted and you're, you know, you're not sleeping and all that stuff, you know, and when you can't find yourself, how do you feel good about sharing yourself with another person, like really revealing yourself when you are in the midst of like, wait, who am I? What time is it? Oh, this person needs me to survive and my partner. And oh my gosh, like I'm healing, I'm uncomfortable. And, you know, I think we really take for granted or like forget about, you know, we have this funky idea that desire is just supposed to show up. Like it's just, if you're in a good relationship, it's just supposed to be there. And a desire is the complicated recipe. It's made of lots and lots of things, you know?
Right. Right.
And, you know, first and foremost is again, if we think about what sex is for most people, for a lot of people, it is, you know, it's sharing, revealing, connection, play, expression. You got to feel tethered to yourself enough or comfortable in your own skin or have some sense of like how to find yourself to show yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's like I said, my youngest is 20, so it's been a long time, but I'm sitting here thinking what a freaking disservice this idea that somehow 6 weeks is enough. I'm just remembering, especially the first baby, but even, you know, that somehow you're on the other side of something 6 weeks after this experience with an infant. I don't think I was even able to take a shower.
Oh, I mean,
I took somewhere in there, I took a shower, but it's really kind of astounding that that's the expectation with the doctor. Check, you're good to go, as if 6 weeks you're even, you know, even beginning to have your feet on the ground. It's crazy.
Really, you know, it's unfortunate because it's a really misleading idea. I mean, oh, you can, but should you? But do you want to?
Yeah.
And right. And that's really tough. Like if you're in a relationship with someone who hears that and goes, okay, great.
Yeah. They're counting the days, right? Marking the days off the calendar.
Yeah. And not for nothing. Yeah. A lot of couples are having to confront differences in their sexual life during the pregnancy. There are big changes that happen there for a lot of folks. And so for a lot of people, again, the partner's like, okay, this has been challenging. Now we get to go back to normal. Now we get to come back. There's no back to normal. It's something different. And it can require a lot of patience. It can require a lot of, again, you know, what feels good today? How can we connect today? Where we're sort of like moving back into this so that we can discover anew. Who am I now? What do I want sexually now? What is sex to me now? Especially, again, for a lot of people, you've got this baby on you all day long. You're getting those like intimacy needs met. You're getting the oxytocin rush in the body and that closeness and that tenderness. And so it can be a tough time where the partner's going, wait a second, but I'm still here and I still want this from you. How can it not be? Hypothetically, we've got a mother, because not all birthing people are moms, you're right.
Hypothetically,
we've got a mom. That's like, I'm giving myself to this little human all day, and now I have to do for you too. How can we create a situation where that's not what this is? And that requires a level of intentionality that we just don't really talk about.
Yeah. I certainly remember the feeling, and you mentioned something earlier that, you know, this little thing that is so dependent on me, you know, children's needs, babies' needs can feel so urgent. It's not quite the right word, but 24/7 on, you know, like it's so consuming. And it was so easy to see my spouse as, well, he's a grown up. He can wait, you know, like that's
totally.
Like, what's the, you know, how do you compare? It's like, but they can't wait forever. Right. Like, it's also not, it's not okay to sort of be like, you know, just, you know, check me when they're 18.
Yes. And that's what, like, when I'm talking to a lot of like cishet couples, right. The idea that like a lot of times the mom is saying, I'm exhausted and I just can't right now. Like, I don't feel like myself. I'm sore. I'm covered in spit up and, you know, like I don't recognize myself in the mirror. Like I am drowning, or I'm just really tired or whatever it is. And then the other partner's going, okay, but this is really important to me. And I think this is another really important conversation to have, is especially for folks socialized male, they're often taught that this is the only place that they can really be vulnerable, that this is the only place that they can really find that kind of connection. They can really let go, you know? And so it's very easy for folks to shoo it off, like, just go masturbate or go take care of your, where they're going, well, no, but this is where I make contact with you. This is where I feel close to you. I really do need this. This is like a need for me.
Right. It's not the need for the orgasm, right? It's a need for, or put a penis in a vagina or something. It's a need to actually get vulnerable and connect. You're right. And I think we miss that a lot. I mean, this comes up even without babies. I mean, in sex therapy, right? People are sort of like, all you think about is sex. And they don't realize, no, sex can be really, it's a really sacred experience. And it's okay to long for that. Yeah.
A really important experience for some people. Because again, if you can imagine, like, I'm a cis woman, I was raised according to how we socialize girls, which is it's okay to be expressive and it's okay to share your feelings and to be vulnerable. In fact, it's encouraged. You should rely on your friends, trust people. You can cry, lean on your... And for, again, a lot of folks who are socialized male, it's not only is it not... the only acceptable feeling to show or demonstrate is anger. And so... we can't live our lives not feeling these kinds of feelings, not being able to show these kinds of feelings. And so, sex becomes where all the eggs are. All the eggs are in that basket, which isn't good. We're trying to raise boys differently now because we understand the repercussions of that. It's not good for people. But we have to bear that in mind, that that is the experience for a lot of folks. And so, you know, again, it's very easy to go like, well, deal with it. It's a period of time, you know, and believe me, you know, I'm there a lot, that like, oh, come on, let's just get through this period of time. But then it's also kind of like, oh, but wait a second, this is really meaningful over here. And this causes suffering or whatever it is for this person, potentially, when it's not part of their life with this person.
And then I'm also thinking there can be other kinds of effects after birth. I mean, personally, I had tearing with two of the three births that I had. I know people who have ended up with prolapse, or, you know, there's like physical changes that we didn't anticipate through birthing these humans that can really complicate this, right?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And like really complicated. And again, if we experience pain, then there's the like anticipatory anxiety that comes with that over time. So again, that changes the like emotional quality of the sexual relationship and ability to let go. You know, if you're anticipating something that's uncomfortable, it's hard to let go. So yeah, absolutely. The physical changes are a big part of it too, and something to factor into the equation in terms of, again, what feels good today, what feels good in terms of touch today. You know, understanding that healing can take a really long time for folks. And we also know that the kind of hormonal cocktail that shows up postpartum that lovely, that special hormonal cocktail.
The house special, right?
The house special. It is intricately like sort of designed to encourage person who birthed baby bonding. Yeah. At the expense of, we don't need any more babies. Thank you. You know, this evolution, right? Thank you.
We're busy right now.
We're busy right now. So that hormonal cocktail, and in addition to what we were talking about earlier with like oxytocin and cuddling and that very real experience, but also all of that going on, it downregulates desire in a very real way. The hormone that is produced when we're breastfeeding, prolactin, it diminishes estrogen in the body. Estrogen's critical for, right? So we also know that biology has an agenda.
Yes.
And it's to, you know, encourage survival of baby into toddlerhood without bringing lots more babies on board and, you know, the whole thing. So there's the biological reality of like a lot of people don't have like, oh, where'd my desire go? It is gone for the first year plus. Yeah. You know, this is another like misleading thing. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, your desire is likely to be relatively, you know, elusive for the first 6 months. You know, the people are really discouraged when it's month 8, 9, 10, 11. They're going, I still can't find it. What happened?
Yeah.
And like we're talking about, what happened is everything happened. Your world flipped upside down, and all of that has an impact on your desire and your intimacy and all of that. But also, your body is still sort of in this place, in this survival evolutionary place. And it can take everyone a different amount of time to.
Right. There's no right amount of time.
It can take 6 months. It can take a year. It can take a bit more than that. It doesn't mean that we can't align as lovers. It doesn't mean that we can't understand that that's going on and say, okay, that's going on. This feeling's not as present for me right now. But what can we do to connect in the midst of this while we get through this season? We can still strategize with that in mind, you know?
Yeah. You've shared a lot of tips throughout this whole conversation, but how would you sort of sum up, I don't know, the bullet points for a couple that's, you know, let's say they've had a baby and some in the last year or two, maybe as recent as last week. What are sort of the basic tips you give for people to find their way to each other, to keep some priority on this in their relationship, and then moving forward to sort of bring that back into their relationship?
Well, a couple things. I mean, first off, I think that I just encourage people to give themselves a lot of credit, you know, first and foremost, like, again, literally everything has changed. Literally everything. This was something that cultures from around the world throughout time have celebrated as a rite of passage, as like a spiritual journey. And we treat it like it's nothing, you know, like it's just another day. And so I want people to bear in mind that like they are navigating the most profound amount of changes in such a small amount of time. And change is incredibly destabilizing for us. And they're doing it, and they are trying to find each other, and they're making sense of it. They are sort of, you know, creating this family and keeping the ship afloat, even if it's really hard. And even if some days they're falling flat on their face. And I just want people to give themselves a lot of grace. But in terms of our sexual connection, I think the bullet points from our talk today are, one, if you don't want to sit down with a sex therapist, which I think everybody on the planet should be sitting down with a sex therapist.
Because we're a little biased, but
I'm a little biased.
Me too.
But I mean, you know, none of us got any kind of proper sex education. All of us have learned really bizarre things and shaming things around sex and sexuality. So this is like a shame space for a lot of people. We don't know how to talk about it. So sex therapy is great. But if that's not something that we're feeling up to at the moment, or we don't have time for, which is very real, I do encourage folks to sit down with their partner and talk about, what is intimacy to us? What is pleasure to us? How can we stay connected? How can we, again, expand on our definition of what it is outside of the thing that we were doing before? So that on days, if we don't feel up to it, but we still want to be close, we have options. Because I really do think that, like, if every time we come close to one another, the expectation is the whole shebang, then we're not likely to engage at all. You know, so if we feel like we have options, if we can say, hey, what I feel like today would be for us to, like, I just want to hold you and I just want to kiss you for a little while. I'm tired, but I love you and I just want to be close. Like, to be able to say, like, okay, great, and meet each other there, I think is awesome for couples.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we can work back into what our sexual life looks like in the more of like adventurous ways from there. It's just a nice starting point for us reconnecting. And again, to sort of like keep into context, this is a season, we will move past it, but trying, you know, again, if there's a lot of like grief or if there's a lot of, you know, that burnt out feeling, we honor that. We want to honor these feelings and we want to give ourselves breathing room. And we also want to be cognizant of when I am avoiding or when I am, you know what I mean? When I'm feeling uncomfortable. And so I just don't want to approach anymore. And like we were talking about earlier with the idea that, oh, I feel like I'm going to be emotional, or I feel like, you know, I feel uncomfortable. I feel a little bit nervous because it's been a while and then I just don't do it. It just sort of like settles this thing into like an actual thing.
Yeah. It becomes the elephant in the room, right? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Versus coming toward and asking yourself, what do I need today? Speaking up for what you need, what your body needs today, what pleasure looks like for you today. It is our job. It's our responsibility. Our sexuality is our responsibility. It's not our partner's to figure out, especially right now. Can we both come in with that understanding too? Like, hey, you let me know what feels good to you. I'm going to let you know what feels good to me. And we can rest assured that we're going to do that. There's no guesswork involved.
The other thing I'm thinking is to really invite people to see this as an opportunity, because like any challenge people have, whether it's they've got a brand new baby and they've given birth and, you know, and all that, or there's sexual dysfunction later in life, or there's a cancer diagnosis, whatever it is, it's not the last time we're going to have to adapt. And each of those is really a chance to be like, really get in touch with who, like you're saying, who am I today? What would I like today? What would be pleasing and connecting today? What can I show up for really authentically? Even if it's very different than what we used to do. And that's such a gift, right? Because it's not the last time we're going to have to reinvent things.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing is, I think it's very natural when things change for our like our gut reaction to just be one of resistance, right? Like, no, I don't want this. You know, and so we do see a lot of folks come to sex therapy being like, but I want my orgasms to feel like they did then. Or I want my sex life to look like it did over there 5 years ago. Like, that's what I want. And so there's so much resistance to what's here now and what's happening now that we can't access anything that is pleasurable about it or potentially pleasurable about it or potentially meaningful about it. And like you said, you know, if especially if we're going to be partnered potentially with our partner for the duration of time, things are going to change. Things are going to shift. Things are going to change in ways where we won't have access to them anymore. Oh, that experience that I had, I can no longer access for whatever reason. And so it is an opportunity to open up the dialogue in a greater way, you know, it's like not trying to put, what is it? The like old engine in the new car repeatedly, like this is new. Things have changed. We can feel that. We can like sink into that. And then we can come to the drawing board together and go, okay, well, now how can we explore together? And it's often an invitation for folks to become more appreciative of the subtleties of things, to become more like mindful in how they approach their sexual relationship with their partner, to tap into the nuances of things rather than I'm waiting for orgasm. Yeah. You know, like on the journey to orgasm, what is it that is fun for you? What is it that is enjoyable? What are the little like glimmers of pleasure that you can really appreciate?
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's also important for people to keep in mind that this is also, you know, this transition represents a massive point of merging for couples. So, you know, the stuff that we learn in terms of like, oh, desire requires some level of like mystery, you know?
Yeah, right.
Right. And now you are walking around your house and everything's out and, you know, and it is, it's like, now we have this being here that further enmeshes our lives. It merges us in a great, right? And so it's important for people in mind too, that this is another great time for sex therapy, because that usually brings up some family of origin stuff for us. You know, when the connection with our partner goes from something that is more lusty and playful and new relationship energy into something that feels more familial in nature, it can bring up some of our attachment stuff. And so we can see some of that too. It's just head spinning.
It really is.
It really is head spinning, the kinds of things that we can see. And that's why I'm saying it's like, you know, it really is an opportunity to explore anew, discover each other with new eyes.
Yeah. All right. So tell people where they can find you. If they, they've listened to this and they want to look you up and either work with you or connect with you somehow, where do they go?
So I have a very clunky social media. I'm not good at it, but it's at Paula Leach Therapy. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. People can find me there and they can find me at paulaleach.com.
Okay. Perfect. I'll put those in the show notes too for people. Awesome. So, well, thank you so much for joining me and opening this whole big topic.
Thank you. Thank you for chatting with me about it. It was awesome.
Of course.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get-to-know-you and question-and-answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.